I'm delighted to be here tonight in the cozy confines of Artifact Coffee to continue our Origin Speaker Series. I'm Spike Jurta, the owner of Woodbury Kitchen here in Baltimore. This gathering is intended to advance the conversation about food, its origins, and what is happening around our food system in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. We started our first restaurant, Woodbury Kitchen, with a commitment to local sourcing, and now work closely with more than 60 different farmers and producers throughout the region. We supply our four restaurants and our canning and butchery operations with meat, eggs, grains, fish and shellfish, cooking oil, cheeses and produce, literally everything we need to feed our guests. The hope is that this series will shine a light on the work that this community is doing in our area. The conversation is held monthly at Artifact, our coffee shop, in the heart of the Woodbury neighborhood in Baltimore. Good evening and welcome to our 13th episode of Origins. Tonight we'll take a closer look at women who have chosen farming as a career and as a way of life. According to the Maryland State Census in 2012, there were 2,296 women farm operators in our state, a 20% increase from the 2002 census. We know women have always played important roles on the family farm, but increasingly women are turning to farming on their own. Our first farmer is Lisa Wheeler Duff, owner of Oak Spring Farm, a small, diversified farm in Freeland, Maryland, in northern Baltimore County. The mission of Oak Spring Farm is to provide families and their communities with organic, wholesome fruits, vegetables, and humanely raised eggs. Lisa came to our area from L.A. where she was a biology teacher. She provides produce to the community mainly through her CSA and at local farmers markets. Our second panelist is Allison Warman, who grew up gardening in the city of Milwaukee and came to Baltimore to attend the Maryland Institute College of Art. She stumbled upon Whitelock Community Farm through Micah's urban farming class and has been working there ever since. The farm began in 2010 when Reservoir Hill residents converted a vacant lot into an active urban farm with the help of hundreds of volunteers. Whitelock Community Farm serves as a model community-based project showing that providing neighborhoods access to land and resources is a sustainable way of revitalizing urban environments and building communities. Our third farmer is Ginger Myers, who along with her husband runs Evermore Farm, a small family-owned and operated livestock and produce farm. Located in Westminster, Maryland, Evermore Farm raises all of their animals on pasture. Ginger has over 25 years of experience in agribusiness and small farm production. Ginger has worked as an agricultural marketing specialist in Maryland since 1999. And now here, as always, is our producer, Dana Slater.
So I'm Dana Slater, for those of you that don't know me, and it's great to see so many familiar faces that come back and back and back again to all these origins. So tonight is a great topic, one that I've been thinking about since we started this, sort of the rise of women in farming. And I did a little homework. I always try to sort of read up a little bit on the stats before we do these. So Ginger may correct me because she seems to be the stat queen, but women now account for 30% of the farm operators in the United States, a number that has almost tripled in the last three decades, and it's the fastest growing segment in agriculture. But beyond the numbers, something that I see as a shift in today's farm landscape, and maybe you guys can corroborate, you know, with me on this, is that women tend to farm on smaller pieces of land, grow diverse crops, and favor sustainable practices, and prioritize food over commodity crops. So we'll get into that debate, I'm sure, as we go on tonight. Until 2002, the U.S. Department of Agriculture only allowed one principal operator to be counted in their census. So in most cases, a man claimed the title. When the data collection changed, it allowed more women to claim sort of their status as farmer. So I think that's changed. That's also sort of been accounted for the demographic shift as well. So we'll take a look at these trends and look at what makes men and women different as farmers and look at some of the peer-to-peer networks that have evolved as more and more women claim the title role of farmers on their farms. So that's it with our introductions. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to Spike.
How great is it that we can have this conversation? I think that we can fill a room full of people who are interested in local ag. I think that's pretty unthinkable 5 or 10 years ago, and now we can do it. And we're talking about women farmers here in Baltimore and Baltimore County, and I just think it's a really good moment for us. And I've been at this long enough to remember when it wasn't like this. And the women that I started buying from at the farmers markets at Waverly and JFX, the two that I remember very clearly, one, Joan Norman, who's still at it with her husband, Drew, and was kind of that, her mantra, I think, even today, is like, if he can grow it, I can sell it. So very much, you know, part of a husband and wife duo. And then Cinda at Gardner's Gourmet, who I used to buy a lot of greens from back in the day, and kind of a long story, but she ended up on her own and has been, I think, farming ever since. Mm-hmm. But now there seems to be a whole new wave of women farmers. But Ginger, I guess I'd love to start with you. You have enough, you were kind of wincing earlier, but you have, like myself, you have enough perspective maybe that you could give us a little bit of a longer view of you know, where, how we've gotten to where we are now. And it's what I think is really kind of a special moment.
I agree with you. You know, I was thinking about the question was going to be, why do you farm? Well, you know, anthropologists will tell you that women were the first farmers. When you guys were out trying to kill mastodons and getting stampled, women were gathering the nuts and the seeds and the grasses and learning. And so maybe part of this is we're genetically predisposed. I want to say somehow there's a link. But also, I came of age during the time of the quote-unquote women's movement, when you were told you could do anything, and it was kind of a new concept. And what we learned was, yeah, you can be anything and do anything, but maybe you can't do it all at once. So we went down that trail of the corner office and the big paycheck, and that was a term of success. And I think women learned a little quicker that perhaps that's not a satisfying quality in your life sometimes. Not that it's bad, but maybe it's not for everybody. I think the two young ladies sitting here are examples of searching for a quest where your work benefits both you and your community in this sense of nurturing. And I'm gonna own it, that women have a sense of nurturing, mm-hmm. whether it's growing in the fields or raising livestock. And now we've also learned that, hey, we're pretty good at business, too. Maybe we've been underestimated a little bit. I used to sit around at Farm Bureau meetings and listen to the big boys tell me how to do it and nod my head and take that knowledge right to the bank. And we've got to that point where we now know we can. We're getting more of the tools, and they're getting the message of what this is, what the consumer wants. And we finally have this marriage of our passion and a market and an appreciation of community that's kind of been evolving. Though I will say there have been women in agriculture for years. It's just they've been on the back burner publicly.
Great. So you guys are here as kind of a, you get to speak for all of these women that are in agriculture right now. And I think it's great that we have someone, Lisa, who's farming kind of in a rural setting, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. In Baltimore, is it Baltimore County?
Yeah, I'm okay. In Baltimore County. Yep. And almost to Pennsylvania.
Allison, who's right here in the city. And we got to stop at Whitelock on our bike tour of all the city farms.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, I think, the highlight of the day, seeing what you had there was so special and so well cared for. So Lisa, why don't you talk a little bit, first of all, of what you're doing.
What I'm doing.
Yes.
I have to say something about the Farm Bureau, though, because I was invited last year, about a year ago, to one of these meetings with, pardon me, older men than me and white. It was filled, right? The room was filled. And I was getting my food, and I was offered a Bud Light, and you know, I was very flattered that I was invited at all, because my neighbor, who's in Big Ag, knows me, and he's watched me grow with my farm. And so he actually has taken me seriously enough to invite me to one of these meetings. And so I was flattered. And I went to the meeting and was just attempting to mingle. And, you know, they all kind of ignored me. I sat down here, like a couple of these men kind of were just, you know, carrying on their conversation. They didn't mean to ignore me. They weren't being rude purposefully. It just kind of happened because they didn't really know what to do with me. So it just, it made me think of that. And so I went through the beginner farmer training program in 2012. And that, for me, really ramped up my farming. And it's also when I started selling to Woodbury Kitchen. A mutual friend, Denzel Mitchell, got my foot in the door with Woodbury, and it was so wonderful to be received and to be appreciated for what I was doing. And it didn't matter either where I came from or what else I had going on in my life. So I was a high school science teacher, and I quit my job when I had my first child. And farming was just, we moved here from Los Angeles, and it grew very organically, where I went to the grocery store and was so dissatisfied with what was offered to me. And the farmer's market in LA, I went to farmer's markets 3 times a week, and it was just so easy to get fresh food and good food. And I went back home and said, okay, I need to start a garden now. My husband's like, but we haven't even unpacked the boxes yet. I'm like, I don't care. I need to dig up this piece of yard. And so it started there. 2012, I went to the beginner farmer training program, where I mentored or was a mentee of Jack Gurley and Becky Gurley, who are just amazing farmers and so welcoming and so knowledgeable. And from there, they're certified organic. I became certified organic and was raising my laying hens in a way that I went to a conference and saw that animal welfare approved was this big label. And I'm like, well, I'd do all that anyway. So I'll just fill out some more paperwork and I'll get that certification too. And, you know, people appreciate what you do when you're doing it, and you're doing it with a passion, you're doing it from the heart. And so it's landed me here in 2016, where I remember sharing with Spike maybe a year or so ago that I actually was making a profit. And I have made a profit as long as my husband had an off-farm job, and things have changed and there's this big story, but the truth is the farm needs to make itself profitable now. So I'm at a real crux in my life where, you know, this is where the rubber hits the road for me, and I get to do it. And it's always been my farm because it's my name on the Schedule F. So I am the woman farmer, but now the woman farmer has to really pay for the farm in totality. So it's, you know, it's scary, but it's a challenge that I'm excited about and I'm up for. So this certified organic label is very helpful. You know, it means that I like to fill out paperwork, I guess, as part of it, and that I'm willing to read the papers that they send me and abide by all the rules, which a lot of people do anyway. They just choose not to jump through all the government hoops to get the label. And same with the animal welfare approved. But it's a point of pride, I guess. It's a point of, yes, I do all of these things, and so I'd like credit for them, I guess. But at the end of the day, it's a passion, and I feel like it is in my nature. It's a nurturing part of me, and I love to feed people. I love to cook. Mm. I love to feed my family. I love to know that it all started with needing to feed my family. Am I close enough to this, Lauren? It just occurred to me that all the sound checks we did probably are going to pot because I'm like sitting back here. So I was driven to feed my family the best food that they could get. And it turns out I can grow it. And that is empowering. So I don't know what your question was in the beginning. That's right.
I'm sure you answered it somewhere in there. And you know, to me, whether you're a chef or a farmer, it's how you arrive at doing what you do and what we do, I think, is there is just about as many ways that that's happened as there are farmers and chefs.
Yeah.
But so, Allison, I'd love to hear kind of how, I mean, we know kind of the story of what landed you at White Lock, but what gets you up in the morning? What's going on at White Lock?
Yeah. So White Lock, I definitely got there, and Elisa pulled a carrot out of the ground, and it was January, and I was like, what? Like, this can happen, and this can happen in the city. And I always grew, my parents were like intentional about having like some growing space in our backyard, but I grew up in the city, you know, it was never for production. It was more just like watch this thing grow and transform. And I think I kind of always had that inclination and really that draw to like watching something transform and grow and what comes from that. And then realizing that that can happen in the city and in a neighborhood where maybe there isn't food access in other ways. Mm-hmm. I definitely was just like, whoa, like this is a huge a huge thing that is happening here in the city. And I was coming from an art background and kind of thinking about what it's like to share experiences with other people and what is your place as an artist and how do you really connect with others, and found that food was like so instantly gratifying in that way and works, you know, it's like really direct and everyone has a history and a really strong connection with it. And that is really just what kind of got me into the whole movement and really keeps me going. I mean, it's like amazing to just be, the other thing is like being outside every day in the city is really different than being outside in a rural environment or being outside in the city and walking to work. Like my place of work is within the city and people are moving around and or through like our space. And I think that that's like a really special environment that I feel extremely lucky to be a part of. And I think it's rare to just be like outside all day. And you just really get to interact with so many different people and like meet people on so many different levels. And that's where kind of like farming has just like, that's why I get up, I guess.
Awesome. And before we get too far into some of the other big questions, I just want to know we're here in end of October. How was your season?
How was the season?
Yeah.
You know, it was good. It's always good. Like I find that you can complain about it if you want to. Like, I can talk about the period of drought we had, or I can talk about the period in the spring that got where it was really warm and then it was really cold. But at the end of the day, you know, it's good. Like, I am so grateful.
What was good this year for you?
It was good carrots. I'm figuring out the carrot thing. We were just talking about that earlier, right? The raised bed, the broad forking. And I was harvesting carrots today that were just these beautiful, long, lovely things. Mm. And in the spring, I had crazy carrots in the spring. And it just, every year there's something new. There's something different that I figure out. Beets, too. I killed it with the beets this year. And the beets were just amazing. I took a risk really early in March when we had that warm spell, right? Does everybody remember the crazy warm spell we had? So I'm like, I'm going for it. I'm doing it. I had these two plots that were pretty ready to go, and I just threw spinach and beets everywhere. And I had spinach for days. I had beets for months. It was fantastic. And, you know, in the summer, I had some issues we talked to about the carrots in the summer, trying to germinate them. Just, you know, it sucked. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, I had so many good things happen that I'm not going to focus on that. Like, just, it was good. It's good.
How about a white lock? How was this?
White lock was good. It was definitely very hot. Like, I cannot ignore that fact.
Yeah, we had some crazy hot weather.
And I think we work with a lot of different people at White Lock. Like, we were working with youth this summer and being like, come on, guys. Like, it's time to go outside. And it's like, code red. Like don't go outside. And I'm like, but we have to. Like, we actually have to. So that was definitely a challenge and just, like, kind of adjusting to, you know, working in environments that aren't desirable sometimes. But again, like, I think, thank you for saying that, because it's good to hear things are good. Like, things were good, you know, like, it's, you can reflect and be like, we had some really awesome workshops. We have cookouts and like potlucks every month. And those were always like really, again, those moments where you just like can stand back and be like, wow, like there's like some magic happening here and everybody's enjoying themselves. And hey, like, I, like, did a little bit of that.
Yes.
Like,
I do this.
Yeah. I put, like, that one seed down, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, Jack, Lisa, you mentioned Jack and Becky Gurley at Calvert's Gift, and they're such great farmers, and they're so practical. I mean, they've made a business out of farming. Jack said something, and it kind of strikes me as I hear you guys talk. You know, one time I was talking, he said, the garlic came in really good. And he said, but it just means something else won't. You know, it's just like, it's always kind of this balancing act.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear, you know, from all three of you about the business of farming, because I know it sounds like you're kind of at that, or, I mean, we all have to deal with the economics of making this local food thing work. And it's funny because, you know, what you were describing at the Farm Bureau meeting where it's, and I think, yes, as a woman, I'm sure you have trouble being taken seriously in that context, possibly. But it's also this, you know, this type of farming sometimes has trouble getting taken seriously,
no,
you know, in the midst of commodity farming. And I'd love to hear all of your perspectives on kind of farming, the business of farming, how you're making a go of it in the city, you know, in the county, and you know, with you're doing incredible pasture-raised meat, and that's, I think that's kind of the, maybe the toughest of all. Anybody?
Family farm too, right? Aren't you generational? I didn't say historical this time. I said generational.
I've been poking about how old I am tonight. A couple of things. You talked about what's good. I think one of the things that we've come to appreciate as farmers is seasonality. It's a word we talk about, but we live it because we have to plan ahead. Like I just did my newsletter for my meat CSA that says, you know, I've finished with my produce CSA because I can't keep gardening now. Time to get my ewes bred. So it's this constant cycle of planning and knowing that if you miss the dates, you might get a chance to do something. But if sometimes if you miss the dates, you're done. So from that standpoint, part of the passion of farming is that you do have to be organized. Part of that organization then is got to make a profit. Mm-hmm. So it goes back to, I always ask people, what are you passionate about? It's really hard to work this hard and not make money if you don't love what you're doing. You can't love what you're doing and keep doing it, though, if you don't make money. So fortunately, some of the trends, like the local food movement, like the chefs buying direct, have made it possible for us to farm at the levels we do. Now, we have 21 acres of pasture that I own. I rent another 80 to have enough land to get these livestock across. But that means I can't sell ground beef for $3.50 a pound the way they do in the grocery store. I have to have, I know what my cost of production, I'm going to tell you right now, I've got $5.51 in a pound of ground beef before it ever leaves my farm. From the raising the animal, sending it to the processor, getting it packaged, getting it marketed. Now, I'm already at $5.50, so I can't sell it for less than that. So, yeah, I'm at $7 a pound for ground beef because I have to have profit. And those folks who work with me have to understand my story is you choose this food because you have a food choice and the way I produce it. Is it the least cost? Probably never is going to be your least cost. But is it going to be the best quality? Yes. Are we talking of value? And that's part of the business concepts that we have to sell to our customers, that this is a value product. You know, if you're looking for least costs, you know, you're going to go to Walmart and buy whatever. And I understand some people's budgets have to do that, and I recognize that. But we have to be in the business of making money. It sounds a little cold, but we won't survive if we don't. So
pay your doctor or pay your farmer. It's the truth. And people are realizing it more and more.
Pay yourself.
Right. And you got to pay yourself, too. Right. I feel like part of my payment is in what I do, that I'm outside every day. I do what I love. I have a flexible schedule for the most part. I work real hard in the summer, but I get winters.
This is the old lady, though, telling me it won't pay the electric bill.
No, I know. I just had to pay the electric bill, Ginger. I'll tell you what, it was not small. And now I got the mortgage.
part of my job in extension is this reality check, that as much as we love what we're doing, at the end of the day, we've got to be able to cover it. I think most of us will say we're never going to get rich,
right?
But we're going to eat really well, and we need to make enough money, you know, for you can afford health care, you can take care of the mortgages, you can raise your kids. And so for all the passion, we still have to show a profit.
Indeed. I love that about you. You did my initial business plan consult with me. You're like, nobody likes me because I tell it like it is. And everybody's like, oh, you got Ginger. I'm like, oh, she's going to rip you. I'm like, you know. And, you know, you were very practical. And at the time, for me, it only needed to be an ancillary income. So, you know, it's a little more loosey-goosey. Like, hey, I can feed the family and I can pay the rest of the food bill. And I can pay for my own, you know, very fancy clothes that I like to buy. So, you know, it was not that big of a deal. And the business plan now has changed. And so I get it. And I hear that. And I need it. I need to come see you because I need to redo my business plan.
Do you have a feel for what needs to happen? You said you're kind of at this crossroads.
I have a feel for what needs to happen. I am the recipient of a grant recently that is will be very helpful in my growing my business. I know I need the marketing piece. I just want to be outside and dig in the dirt, and I want to plant things and harvest things. I love to deliver to, you know, Woodbury Kitchen, talking about the financial piece. When I found a home in selling my produce to Woodbury Kitchen, I was appreciated from the get-go, and I was paid a fair wage. I could actually get paid and feel like I wasn't giving it away. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, my roadside stand, or even at the first little bit of the farmer's market, people are like, it's a lot of money, right? And Spike has always been a believer in paying farmers well and doing the grower meeting. And, you know, they set the bar high for what they want. And if they don't like it, they might not buy it from you again. But if you give them what they want, then they're going to pay you what's a fair price. And he's really set that for the restaurants, for a lot of the restaurants of Baltimore, and set it for Chesapeake Farm to Table, the food hub I sell my food through. So that makes a huge difference, is people understanding that the food is worth a fair price and that it's fresh. And now the farmer's market, I feel there's more and more appreciation every year. The farmer's market, the people come, they know I harvested it yesterday. People marvel week after week. Wow, your salad mix lasted the whole week.
What market are you at?
The Hereford Market, my little local market. Uh-huh. I just applied to JFX, though, for next year. So, you know, I have a plan. More markets, more CSA. And it needs to be a little more concrete. But I just want to play in the dirt, and that's my issue, right? So I need help with getting the numbers clear.
Yeah.
And I need help with the marketing piece, because as much as I like to talk, and you've all figured that out already, I'm not good at selling myself. I'm really not very good at it. So that's, thanks, Jess. To you, I can sell myself. But
how big is your CSA?
40 people. So I'm looking at, you know, increasing it by 50 to 100% next year, because it's time. Mm-hmm. And it was 40 last year. It's 40 this year. And with marketing and with help with that, that's how I'm going to make it. I'm not going to do it by just continuing to put pictures of carrots on Facebook. Well, I'm not, right? So the real work is in the winter for me sometimes, is actually making myself sit down at a desk and at a computer and crunching numbers and really working on my crop planning and working on my marketing plan.
Oh, you need to start that in November.
Yes, ma'am.
How does Whitelock's produce get out into the world?
Yeah, so I guess Whitelock is a little bit different in that it is functioning as a nonprofit farm, meaning that we're doing like a lot of education and programming in addition to growing as much food as we possibly can on our like less than an acre of land in the city of Baltimore. So, I mean, really, and yeah, hearing everyone talk about the value of food, I mean, that's really kind of what it comes down to, and what we're all kind of like fighting against is this like really built up model that like you can get, you know, carrots for a bag for $2 or whatever, and really like that's not what it costs a lot of people, or it's not maybe not what it should cost, kind of changing our image of what we eat and what goes into that. And I think that it's something that we're really trying to do on the ground at Whitelock in all of our education and programming. So we work we have a farm stand on our site, so it's like really little. It's just us on the corner selling our stuff, but neighbors come by, people from outside the neighborhood come through, and you know, they can both pick up their produce and then see where it's grown. And for a lot of people, like seeing that space or seeing like people out working in the garden and having a stronger connection to food can kind of change that like that value. And you know, even more and more people are like, oh, and it's organic too. And you're like, yeah, it is. That means like I'm crushing little bugs like in the background. Like, and it takes me like however long to do that. So, but we also try to make our food a little bit more affordable. So we do subsidize our prices a little bit in the neighborhood, lowering it to what's comparable to the grocery stores, so that it is affordable for our neighbors, because that's a big part of our mission. But it does make it really challenging when at the end of the season we're like, okay, so we made this amount of money and we do X amount of work and we have only 2 employees. So how do we stretch and like kind of reach into all the realms of both working on that programming and then also kind of like doing the farming, which in itself
making money to buy seeds
is really hard. Yeah. So, and I think the urban farming movement is really kind of in this place where people are trying to figure out like what do we do? Like, how do we do this? Cause I think everyone really knows that it's really valuable work and finds that enjoyment in the field and things. But beyond that, we're like, how does this become sustainable? Like, what is the answer? So I'm really, I don't have the answer. I'm curious to see where it develops. But I think, like you said, like just having, knowing your farmer, knowing where your chefs, where you're going, knowing what restaurants you're supporting, like those little moments where you can make decisions are kind of starting to add up, I think. So I'm really excited to see how that develops.
I would also say you're at the point where you're going to have to start segmenting your markets. Last year, our product sales, when I did the analysis, a quarter of it went through CSA. We do a year-round, 4-month CSA in our meats, chickens and eggs. So I sell it year-round as a CSA. I sold a quarter of what I sold at the farmers market. I'm off 30% this year at farmers markets. I think they're down, and I would, because they're so prevalent now, and I'm finding, I don't know how many of you are millennials, but they come to the farmers market, they get a cup of coffee, a Diablo donut. They visit with their neighbors, their kids play, they get the pizza that's made by the guy who's got the hot oven and go home. We're starting to lose some of this passion and mission at farmers markets, and it's starting to worry me. So
where are you? What markets?
I've pulled out of all the city markets. I have drawn back to Carroll County. I've drawn a 20-mile circle around my farm and said, that's where I want to sell. Do I come down to restaurants here? Yes. But I'm not, because of the time factor, we do a whole thing about whether farmers markets, you know, time-wise, how much we have.
Yep.
So I've got a quarter in the markets, and that's sliding backwards. I've got a quarter of what I sell to restaurants. The other quarter has been at my farm when people drive. My most profitable sales when they drive in my driveway and buy direct off my farm. And I think we've got to start moving the model a little bit where they're coming to you more than you going to them, because of our time factor. And so, you know, there's only going to be so many people who love your carrots and are willing to pay for that. What's the next segment that you can take it to? There's certainly Spike. Where else? I really think there needs to be better aggregation of product in the city as a way for distribution, because when we're all running to Spike, we're tons of miles, everybody in the door, it's burning a lot of time, and it worries me that we're not going to be sustainable and be able to grow that market then. See how I'm negative? See how downward spiral.
No, that's positive. You're pro aggregation. That's very positive. Chesapeake Farm to Table, Jack and Becky Gurley's company, is an aggregator, a small time aggregator. But the whole idea is that I have to drive 15 to 20 minutes to drop my produce for 8 or 10 or 12 different restaurants, and I don't have to spend my day delivering. That lets me be on my farm. Do I have to pay for that? I do. I do have to pay for that. And what I'm realizing, though, is that I wouldn't, most of those restaurants wouldn't be buying from me if I wasn't doing it through Chesapeake Farm to Table, because I wouldn't deliver $40 worth of stuff to 5 different restaurants, you know, twice a week. And sure, do I want them all to buy $200 worth of stuff twice a week? Of course. But that's not how it goes all the time. So the aggregator, I think it's happening. I mean, I don't know. It's just, it seems like a positive in my neighborhood because Jack and Becky are, it's working for them. It's working for Chesapeake Farm to Table. It's working for the farmers that are utilizing it. But I agree that a lot of us are running around in delivery vans or SUVs and spending time and gasoline, you know, the fossil fuels and our time off our farms to deliver to all these restaurants, because people buy from people, right? That's what it comes back to, is that sales piece of, well, if I buy from an aggregator, if I buy from that, I don't get to see my farmer, and then I don't know my farmer anymore. So how do we bridge the gap there?
before we get, we're going to get some questions, but the people that we're talking to tonight are women, and I don't want to lose that. I mean, a lot of these these
we're
issues,
just we could, we're just
yeah. But I would love to, you know, you've talked about wanting to dig in the dirt, Allison. You connected, I think, what you're doing at Whitelock to the, you know, to art and engaging with people, and I just love to get a sense again before we get questions about what you may think you're doing maybe differently than your male peers. If there is a difference, or and maybe
well, yeah,
there isn't.
You're up,
I guess I don't. I'm like, is there a difference? Like, I,
right.
I think I mean I've definitely surrounded myself in women driven fields like since I can remember, and working. I did textiles in art school, so it was like very female driven major, and then like, you know, it was didn't really live in a traditional house where men did this and women did this. So I, you know, never see that as like a thing until someone projects that onto me. And I think that's where there's really, you know, when I'm carrying a box down the street and somebody's like, oh, can you do that? And I'm like, yeah, I can do that. Like, I'm doing it. Like, I'm doing it right now, in fact. And you are talking to me and you're making me not do it. So like, you know, like there's like, I think that's really a big, that's my response.
Nurturing. Ginger mentioned it right off the bat about nurturing. And I think for me, I remember talking to somebody last month about that I went to Berkeley and I was in the health collective there. I worked at the free clinic and I loved healthcare. I thought I wanted to be a doctor. I was on the pre-med track. That's why I studied biology. And so for me, healthcare and farming are somehow related. And Leslie was like, I don't see how healthcare and farming could be related. And this totally stuck with me. And I'm like, it's empowering people. It's empowering to teach people how to take care of themselves. So part of farming for me is teaching my daughters that they can take care of themselves. And it's I have a lot of volunteers that come to the farm, most of whom are women. And they come back, not because, I mean, I make them work really hard usually, but they come back and they just are always asking questions. And there's a real communing going on. And we're sharing information. My stepmother taught me how to can, and her mother taught her, and her grandmother taught her mother. And she taught me with love and nurturing, but also with a very strong practicality of, you know, you should know how to do this. And so I feel like growing food it's a skill, and it's also it's empowering and teaching other people how to do it. So and the carrying 50-pound sacks or whatever, right. I had a strong young buck work for me last year and this year, and he's just always trying to take stuff away from me so that I don't carry it. And I'm like, I've been doing this long before you came along, son. Yeah. And I'm good.
Let him do
it. You know?
It.
I
30 years, you're going to wish you let him do it.
You're right. So.
Well, there's like a really, I think, I mean, one of the things that I really felt when I first started working at Whitelock was I was working alongside Elisa, who, if nobody knows about Two Boots Farm, like, check it
She's
out.
She's awesome.
She's amazing. And there wasn't really a question about, like, can you do this thing? It was like, this is what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Like, climb on the ladder, put up the plastic on the hoop house. It wasn't even like a question of have you used a power drill before. It was like, here's the drill, here's this. And I really valued that, just like having someone give that to you and not necessarily question, can you, will you, are you comfortable, like da da da. Because there's a moment where you have to figure that out yourself, and having another strong female presence be like, go ahead.
You got it.
You know, like that's, I try to think about that now when I'm like working there. I'm like, okay, like don't check in so much. Like they can do, she's got it. Like they've got it, you know. But I think there's really, like you said, the community around that is just like super special in that way.
Mm-hmm. Having grown up in a farming community, originally from Pennsylvania with a dairy background, everybody worked. I mean, you slung hay bales, you did all, you know, the same thing the guys did, except they drove the bigger tractors maybe. But actually, one of the most popular projects for extension nationwide, and we have a very strong chapter here in the Maryland, Delaware, Virginia area, is called Women in Ag, and the program is called Annie's Project.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you attended Annie's?
I haven't attended. I know about it.
I get there.
Annie's Project was founded about 20 years ago by an ag agent in Iowa, a woman ag agent, who watched her family farm evolve, and her dad died, and her mom was left, and her mom knew how to do everything on the farm, but she had never been included in the management or business decisions.
Mm.
You know, her dad went to the bank and got the loan. Her dad went to the farm meetings. Didn't mean that mom couldn't run that farm physically, but she had no business training. She had not been included. And so this agent developed a farm business management course, as it is, called Annie's Project. It usually runs 6 to 8 consecutive weeks, and we cover topics like who's in business with you. Do you understand how your land's titled, what your insurance agent does, legacy planning, how do you pass down the farm or protect the farm? It may be under production, it may be under risk management. We bring in insurance agents. What's your liability? These are all questions that have nothing to do with sexuality other than we've been excluded. And so when you ask what the difference is now, we have women being much more trained into the business sense. And I actually have men who say, you have one of these for guys? I said, well, you know, who's going to organize it? Because, you know, men. Who would put that together? Only kidding.
That's great.
But it is the kind of training, and that's where the difference has been. Not that we physically couldn't do it, but we've not been included in business management decisions and had those tools that now women are claiming.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I look around this room and I know that we have a lot of rock star or kick-ass, no.
Rock star.
Okay.
Farmers and people are interested in joining the conversation.
Hi there, I'm Sarah Morton. I have kind of a personal question. I'm also a small-scale organic farmer and own my own farm with my fiancé in Baltimore County. And I feel like I feel really excited to ask this question because it's a question I often find that I want to be the head of a session at farming conferences, at PASA and at NOFA and Young Farmers Conference. I always feel as a woman in my 30s, about to get married, owning my own farm, running my own farm, the main production manager of my farm, I question a lot about being a mother and farming. So I guess Ginger, maybe more specifically, maybe I'm emotional just kind of asking that question out loud, but I find myself moving into that question of seeing how hard I work, how hard my body works, especially I heard Allison say this season I thought about being a pregnant woman or a new mom and working, having heat stroke 3 times in the season and how we work that. So I guess my question is twofold. One, sort of the logistics of being a mother in a diversified farm where we have livestock and big equipment and how I can keep my child safe and with me and be a mother. And then sort of the logistics on the business side, if I were to sort of pull back and have someone come in and help me with my farm so I can be a more in-the-home mom, how does that work and how do you balance those things? Thank you.
My children are 33 and 35. They survived. Okay? And it was the best place to raise kids because you took them with you. Because they were there. You know, they weren't under somebody else's care. Maybe you're not as comfortable with that. I put my... We dairied. And I put my little boy in the feed cart to play while I milk cows. When the feed started coming through in his diapers, time to get him out of the feed cart. Our daughter rode her tricycle up and down the aisle, and a cow coughed one time.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, we tell that story at her wedding now. Be cognizant where they are. It's a great way to let them grow. You're going to have to manage your time. There's going to be nap time. Can you put them down? Can you go do something? You know, it's organization. I milk cows the morning, both mornings before I went to the hospital and delivered. You know, it's a pretty common thing. You got to pace yourself. Stay healthy. and know your own limits, but don't be afraid of it. It is the best place in the world to raise kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can second that with, I have 13, he's going to be 11 on Saturday, and I have 7, she's my baby. So the 7-year-old lived in a sling, the baby carrier sling, and I was outside working, harvesting, cooking, you know, doing all the things. And the other two, I really don't know where they were, what they were doing. They were around the farm somewhere. And then when she got old enough, whoosh, stick her on the back. Ergo pack, the only pack to go with. And she lived in the backpack until she was like 2-ish. And just, you know, so she's still the mommy, mommy, mommy girl. I mean, she nursed until she was 3 and I had to rip her off because she was so used to being with me. And that's the way it should be. I'm blessed. My parents live across the street. They moved after a few years after we bought the farm, my parents moved. And so, you know, extended family is huge. And if you don't have actual blood family, extended family that are, you know, people that are like family, like-minded people. And you just, it's, you know, I put my kids on the bus every day. I can get my kids off the bus every day. I call it free-range parenting. You know, I'm not a helicopter mom. I'm not worried about every little thing my kid eats. My kids have eaten a ton of dirt. They've played with the chicks, and then they come in and eat dinner, and I'm like, did you, like halfway through dinner, did you wash your hands? And you know what? My kids, when the stomach virus goes around, they get a stomach ache for like an hour one night. Other kids, out of school, 3-4 days. I'm not even kidding. I mean, it's amazing. So I'm very grateful. When I was teaching, I left home at 6:30 in the morning, and I wouldn't get home till 4 or 5 o'clock at night. Because that was before I had kids, and it was hard for me to imagine still continuing to be a teacher and raising children, and farming gives me the flexibility, and, you know, you can do it. You just do it however you do it, and it's a good way to go. You know how many kids you have, do you?
No kids over here.
So my name is Paige Payne, and I'm really excited about the other financial opportunities that you all have coming. You mentioned about a bike tour across some farms. What is that about? And are there other opportunities? That sounds so exciting. And are there other opportunities for you all to bring folks to you, like you were saying, to purchase directly from you, because that's where the money is and the education is as well. So are there other opportunities like that, and where do I sign up for the bike ride?
You have some things coming up. Don't you have some events coming
Yeah,
up?
We have, if you feel like coming out to Whitelock Farm and doing some yoga, we have an event coming up next Saturday. We have a farm stand at our farm every Saturday, so this event is following that, and it's a fundraiser for us, $5. One of our CSA members is leading the yoga class. And so, I mean, we talk about community too. I mean, it's mm-hmm. kind of a special place where CSA can also become a part of your farm and your community. And so this woman was like, hey, I teach yoga, like, let's do this thing and maybe you'll make some money. And I was like, that's so kind of you. Thank you. We really need that. So, figuring out different activities. We've hosted like workshops on our farm before, which is a great way to both bring education to like processing food and preserving food and different ways to eat vegetables and care for yourself, talking about probiotics and things. And then also, you can charge a little bit for them sometimes, and that can be really helpful. So that's kind of what we're doing. The bike tour was organized. You guys organized that one?
Yeah,
there's been a couple different like urban farm bike tours, just because there are so many throughout the city, but you can speak to that one, I guess. Are you doing another one?
We were hoping to get one in for the fall, but we didn't get there. This one happened this spring, and we visited 4 farms, and we charged, we charged about $40, and we started here at Artifact, and we started with coffee and baked stuff. We took off, and we did a nice loop that included Whitelock and Real Food and late lamented Big City Greens, or now Strength of Love, and Boone Street. And we stopped at Grand Cru for a little snack, and we stopped at Parts and Labor for a little snack and a beer, and it was really nice. And then we split it down the middle. The farms got half, We took half to cover the cost of the stops, and we ended up back here for Union Grays, and we had tacos outside.
Oh, fun.
And Union craft beer. So it was an amazing afternoon, and it was just spectacular. And it was a way that to bring, you know, not a lot of dollars, but dollars back to the farms. And I think we have to be just, Ginger kind of mentioned the fact that I think farmers markets, in a sense, are starting to feel a little bit plateaued. And I think a lot of the attendance is still there, but a lot of the dollars I'm hearing from other growers just aren't, the sales aren't there the way they used to be. And I think that what that means is we're going to have to be a little more attentive to how we translate things like you guys are doing, things like we're doing, into dollars to keep these businesses going. We're going to have to be a little more creative.
And I would challenge you all to take it upon yourself to seek these things out. If you were going to go out for the evening, you would check the menu at a restaurant. If you're going to the movies, you would check what's showing. Have you checked this weekend what's available to go visit on farms? The pumpkin patches, the tours. You know, there's an ice cream trail where you go to different ice. So part of this has to be you're being proactive as well. There's a wine trail. I mean, there's all this good stuff. And it is out there. You can search it on, you know, it's searchable through Facebook, through ag listings, through tourism councils. They put all this. So there's a lot of opportunity. We're trying to get you to come to us. So you need to seek that out some.
And I think Spike wants to do a farm-to-table dinner at Oak Spring Farm next spring. So just keep an eye out.
Yeah,
keep an eye out for that.
That's definitely now on the calendar as we speak.
Okay, we have a question here. My name's Mary Kingsley, and we live on a small farm in the Montgomery County Ag Reserve. And my daughter and I are co-founders and owners of LadyFarmer.com. Look us up. And so I wanted to speak to the topic of getting people out to the farm. I'm on the board of the Montgomery County Alliance. I don't know if y'all are aware of the Montgomery County Agriculture Reserve. It's 100,000 acres. It's a third of Montgomery County to the west of Washington, D.C. So pertinent to what you're saying about the limited income opportunities for just producing vegetables and taking them out in CSAs, or having a growing, I guess I'll call it agritourism activity out there. And we have, the of course, the pick-your-own patches. There's several farms that are now become wineries, and they have farm-to-table dinners. And we have every year the Montgomery County Ag Reserve has a huge bike ride. This year we had 500 to 600 riders, and they're goes all around the Ag Reserve. And unfortunately, just missed it. It was 2 weeks ago, but it's every October. So look up MontgomeryCountyAlliance.com and sign up for next year and join the alliance. But there's lots of ways, and I think it's growing to get people out into the rural areas, and when they're out there to pick their pumpkins or to do their farm-to-table dinner or to the wine or the bike ride or the sheep shearing or the art tours. We have artists, a lot of artists live out there. We have art tours 3 times a year. Then they're going to see what you have to sell, and they have watched Food Inc., and they know that this meat is worth the extra money. And so anyway, I just thought I'd share that. So look at Montgomery County Alliance and join us and come out to the Ag Reserve in Montgomery County. It's an awesome place.
100,000 acres.
Yeah.
Kate. It's just a quick question as far as why people aren't really coming out to the farms as much. Do you think that has something to do with the fact that, you know, large grocery stores are now carrying, you know, an organic selection of produce? And what would you say to the people that are turning more towards, you know, just grabbing it while they're doing their other grocery shop as opposed to making the extra trip out to the farm or out to the farmer's market?
Convenience. right? I mean, we live a lifestyle of convenience, and we've all been trained that that weekly grocery trip is just the easy, it's the way to go, right? You get your toilet paper, you get your ibuprofen, and your organic spinach all in one stop. I have a great volunteer who was in my CSA for years and volunteered for me. And one day she came and she goes, "Hey, Lisa, did you know that Walmart is carrying organic produce now?" And I heard her, but I didn't look at her face. And I just was like, and I looked at her and she's smiling. I'm like, huh. Yeah. So, like, it is a nice thing. But anyone who goes to the farmer's market understands that the food, the salad mix lasts for a week or 10 days, and the stuff you get in the grocery store, you're lucky if it's any good by the time you get home. But I think it's convenience.
It is convenience, but it's we're back to this value. I tell you that my ground beef, $7 a pound. So who is my customer? It's not the person who's looking for the one-stop buy-it-all. They understand, first of all, the taste and quality. Oftentimes, some of my best customers are homeschooler parents because of the values that they have. Mm-hmm. They understand. They love to bring the kids run around, look at the critters, play outside. It's part of the experience. It is not convenient. Going to farmers markets are not convenient. There has to be a motivation there. It's about this story and what they buy. My lane is 0.6 miles long, and it's not pretty. You know, your Honda's going to bottom out someplace. But people come back there and say, "I had no idea this place was here 3 miles from Westminster." I pull people out of Baltimore who love to come and sit on the hillside, and their kids complain they don't have to worry about being out in the street get hit by a car. We've got to get the message of the value of the experience. And we are an experiential society. Look at the reality shows that go, why do people sit around and watch Ice Road Truckers? You know, we want to somehow experience. Get out and go do it. That's the message we've got. We've got to get people out to buy the food, visit the farms, preserve the farmland, get the message of community linked to what we do as farmers. And I don't care if you're men or women. That's a story we've got to get out there.
I agree. Just to go along with that is just the whole buy local, you know, to keep the money in the community. And I think that is maybe a movement that's happening now. And I know myself, you know, even though I am a farmer and I do raise my own meat, and there's some vegetables I don't have, I go to the farm and I buy it because I want the cleanest, freshest, and I want to keep the money in the community. I don't want to support Walmart or Wegmans or I don't know those people. So I think that's the word that needs to get out, is if you want the best food, it might cost you a little bit more, but like you said, pay your doctor or pay your farmer.
Yeah, I think that's the value, really, is that the nutrition that you're getting from soil that has been stewarded by a family, by people that want to keep that land. And we build our soil. We take care of our soil. We take care of our land. It is not just, you know, even compared to big organic that's happening in California, tens of thousands of acres, where it's still, they're organic chemicals, and the soil is being used over and over and over again, and huge machines are harvesting it, or people that are being paid unfair wages and without access to proper bathrooms. And so our food is more expensive to buy from us, and it's more expensive than you're ever going to find in the grocery store, but it is so much more nutritious, it's fresher, it lasts longer, and you're keeping the money in your local community. So I think it's a whole mind shift, it's a whole way of thinking that some people really have our understanding. People in this room understand it. And going to the farmer's market or going to the farm as an experience versus like, oh, I have to go get milk, right? Like if you run out of, or, you know, we used to be the kind of community where, you know, if you ran out of sugar, you'd go to the neighbors for a cup of sugar. Now it's like, who even knows their neighbors half the time, right? It's like, well, I don't know them. I can't go ask them for a cup of sugar. when I moved to where we live 10 years ago, I was waiting for the apple pies to start rolling in. Like, I'm living in the country, beautiful old farmhouse, right? Like, where are the people knocking on my door with the apple pie? I really thought somebody was going to bring me an apple pie. Not an apple pie. I threw a party 4 months after we moved in, and I went around to every neighbor, and I gave them a flyer, and I said, come meet your new neighbors. And they came to my chili cook-off party, and that's how I met my neighbors. And, you know, it's okay. I'm happy that I did that. I'm happy to know my neighbors. They're good people. But it's, we've become this insular society, the nuclear family. And so it is, but it is changing. It's kind of going back to the old ways a little bit, right? Where we depend a little more on community and we have a little more faith in supporting the local people and keeping the money in the community instead of going to a huge grocery store where those employees are deprived of health insurance and deprived of full-time hours and are treated less than human. I don't want to support that. I buy everything I need in the summer months at my farmer's market, and if I can't, I ask my local, my other farmer friends what they've got.
And then we close the farmer's markets, and then where do you go?
Well,
isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's not easy. Yeah. So that's when I have to eat everything out of my freezer, which it gets pretty dull cooking.
So, you know, for city dwellers who have made an effort at time to go out and visit farms, but when we go to, like, for example, if we go to the Sunday market under JFX, it is a giant market, and you do see a ton of stuff where it's the prepared food stuff. We'll struggle going around and sort of that, you know, making that story. So shy of, you know, the names that we've seen, whether it's on the menu at Spike's restaurants or folks that have talked to this, what would you want for customers? Like, how do we approach people to understand, you know, obviously what they have, what's good or what the story is, you know, because it does, to us, it does make a difference sort of knowing who we buy from, but sometimes it's a bit overwhelming about how do you approach that and who, you know, gone to places where you see people pulling vegetables out of the grocery store, but, you know,
yeah, pulling off the PLU tool.
Yeah. So how do you be a conscious consumer at the farmer's market?
No, it's local.
And going to a producer.
It's seasonal. No, it's seasonal. I mean, I think that's like the, like that's a really big thing. Yeah. Making connections with people. I mean, there's also urban farms throughout the city that have produce that you could visit and like kind of get a sense for what things. I feel like urban farms to me are kind of this cool like a space to make a connection
Absolutely.
Between rural and city farming and really having it within this environment where you can go and see like, oh, this is what's happening here. Like, this is like how this is grown. And I mean, even I'm sometimes curious, it's like, oh, what does this look like on a large, like, how does this look on a large scale? Or like, how does this develop? But I think like making, you just really have to like do a little research sometimes. And
it sounds like you're doing some.
Yeah.
And going to JFX is a producer-only market, so shame on them if they're buying it from the Lancaster auction and hauling it down there, because that is a producer-only market, and everything those people have on their tables needs to be grown by them. So that's a good start, going to producer-only markets, and then just making, you know, talking to people, yeah, asking questions. When did you harvest this? I love to brag about that at my market. I love to tell people, I harvested that this morning, or I harvested that yesterday. And, you know, and so you'll get a feel for that.
Ask them the variety. If they can't tell you what variety
Absolutely.
It is,
Absolutely, yeah,
grow.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know,
it's cauliflower.
At Pike's Market out in Seattle, it's a beautiful market. You know, they talk about the flying fish all the time. But out there, the growers have a badge they wear that says, I'm your farmer. Ask me. And so right off, I mean, the only people that get to wear that are the producers that come in there, not the resellers. So they are encouraged that to talk. I wish we'd do a little bit more of that here, but you'll flush out real quick. Tell me the variety. Where did it come from? When was this? You know, tell me the best way to cook this. Mm-hmm. If they can't talk about their product in those terms, it may be somebody hired to work in that booth, but shame on that farmer if they didn't train that person better to tell you. But yeah, once you start asking some questions, you know, when the pineapple shows up, it's local. You know, if somebody has onions this big in May, probably was. Yeah. So, you know, educating yourself is what comes on the market, and then kind of feeling that, you know, those kind of questions out. Mm-hmm. I think the Jones Falls gotten way too big. I think the size is going to really hurt them along the way. Because just like your problem,
yeah, it's
what is this now?
Yeah.
I have a question for you. Just a problem to talk about. Looking at all of the other businesses that are out there and how we as a country have gotten farther and farther away from the little mom-and-pa kind of stores, mm-hmm. and we've gone to the big Walmarts type facilities, I've often wondered, before I got involved in listening to some of this stuff, how can a local farmer make a living when in every other area of business that I can think of, people are getting away from the small mom-pa kind of company? How do you make it logistically? How do you get customers to come to you when every other aspect of purchases from a consumer, they're going to the big shops?
I don't know the answer to that question yet, Ginger. I've got 2 years to figure it out.
Take a look at Vermont. They have pushed B2B to the elite.
Yeah.
And it's not just, you know, food. It's, do you know your local insurance business? Do you buy from an independent gas shop? Do you eat at independent restaurants? Do you start to see where the network nodes of being local connect? And, you know, from the standpoint of how do you make it, you have got to make those connections with those, again, who share your values. I love a food recall. I just love it. Because, you know, remember spinach? Spinach you can grow in 98% of this country. You know, we have a spinach scare. Spinach markets here took off, the local stuff. You know, whenever there was the pink slime, man, my hamburger sales went through the roof. Because people suddenly, they were scared.
Do you see the pendulum swinging back at all?
I see the food network has educated the consumer just enough that they don't know what they don't know, so they come to me and say, well, I was looking for grass-fed, and you have grass-fed. I know it's better. And I said, how do you know it's better? Well, I read something about that. So they have just enough to know that they need to seek something out. We need to help them close that loop. But it won't be the cheapest product. They've got to understand if this is what you want to do. Most times, women come to buy from me first, and their husbands are saying, I don't want you to pay that much for that. You know, really?
Yeah.
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 Yep. Totally. And, but then you take it home, and they eat it, and it's the husband who says, go back to that farm and get some more of that. You know, we've got those experiences, and we've got to build on that. And again, cooking needs. I'll sell, last week was the switch for me at farmers markets. I sold out a roast. June, I can't hardly sell a roast.
Right.
Now we're into the fall. People are crock-potting. You know, they've got the, suddenly, how do I have the product that they want when they want it? I got to understand what my customer wants. I'll still sell steaks all year round, but I'm not doing as, burger patties have now fallen off my table virtually. And the roast and the stew cubes are back up. So how do we make it? We know our market. We know our product. And we have answers when people are saying, how can I eat better? I want something better for my family. I don't know how to cook it. I don't know where to buy it. Can you help me? Our job is to satisfy that need in the market.
Am I crazy or vegetables from women farmers just always nicer?
No, do you know that's totally... I thought of that when you said, what's the difference between men and women? Because I've had a lot of boys work for me. And they don't... You know, when I'm... You know, somebody else packed up the tat soy yesterday, so I hope David didn't have to work... Or the women back there didn't have to work too hard. But I pick through it. Like, I look at it, and I'm like, oh, that's a bad leaf. And so it's not maybe always cost-effective, but when I'm cutting it, I take more time and I take more care to make sure that I'm getting it just at the right length or I'm getting it just right there, and I probably wash it a little more gently and take more care with it. Because aesthetics, I feel, are more important to me than most anyone else who's worked for me. But the women who've worked for me seem to take a gentler and a more aesthetic approach the boys, whew, man, I just have to take them off of, like, they can't cut greens anymore. And they, you know, I have to really oversee the packaging up of things. Mm-hmm. So there's something about that, I believe.
Okay, good. I'm glad it wasn't just me. Well, I think we're at that moment now where we, at least those of us who are here in the room, get to enjoy a supper that hopefully will kind of reinforce everything we've been able to talk about. And tonight, as we said earlier, it's being prepared by cooks from Woodbury, Parts and Labor, and Artifact. Leah from Parts and Labor. Bree from over at, who's one of our kick-ass, she really is kick-ass, line cook at Woodbury, and Sarah, who's a cook here with David at Artifact. So thanks, as always, for joining the conversation, caring about where your food comes from. Thanks to you guys. That was amazing. I knew it would be great. Thanks again for joining us tonight for our conversation at Artifact Coffee. With special thanks to Dana Slater for producing the program, Hannah Reagan for her masterful coordination, and particular thanks to Donnie Carlo for recording this evening's conversation. We're grateful to be partnering with Heritage Radio in Brooklyn, New York. Thank you to them for creating a home for the Origin Speaker Series.